So these days, do you like to read news? I actually don't. But I check them out at least once a week. And not just America, but overall, I cannot help but to think about what does it mean to have leaders? Or who are those leaders? Or why are, how did they become our leaders? And that's one side. And also, in a way, all of you, all of us are leaders in a certain way. What does it mean? In this ancient book, a story about Saul and David, pretty interesting. Deeper you dig into the symbolic and also historical teaching between them, more you'll gain about this ancient wisdom. And the core of the teaching is in that right there, God saying, I don't see the outside. I see what's in the heart. You know? So what's in the heart? Problem is, can we see each other's heart and say, oh, his heart is good and his heart is not good? We cannot do that. So our system is somewhat where we elect our leaders by voting. And they have their chance to convince us that they are capable. And I've been in America over 22 years. So some roughly I have observed about 6 or so presidential elections and many other elections. And watching them, one thing was very clear. Wow. Too much. I don't think I can tell either what I'm reading is really true or not. Or this person is really saying what is in the heart or not. So how do we know? That's a big, huge question. Actually. And in a very simple in here, God is keep saying in the whole Bible, what's in the heart? If you want to match that to the New Testament reading, that's where it comes as being a child, like humility. Somehow in American culture, being humble is not a good thing. It's not a lot, but in my college time and my activities with my friends, if you're humble, then you'll never get a chance to do anything. If you want to do something, you better raise your hand and shout out, say, yes, I can do it. Then you're good to be chosen. Was there any more wisdom needed to assess who could be the real person or maybe even what kind of quality they were looking for? You know, to be the leader in a certain group. So, I will just share a few ancient wisdoms. I'm not trying to, get into all political things and I have all the solutions. I don't have any solutions. So, yeah, please, let's get it clear on it. But it has been somewhat very clear since the beginning of human civilization, both East and the West, ever since actually human beings developed something called critical thinking. All the ones who had brain to think, they thought about it and reflected upon one issue actually. What is the quality of the ruler or governor or officers? Why? Because it matters. If you have wrong people in the positions, what happens? Well, you know, probably. But this country is not that bad. If you go other countries, Africa, Afghanistan, you know, other countries, even worse. So in this whole ancient wisdom, there are Confucian, there is Taoism, Buddhism doesn't really talk about leadership. And there is Western philosophy. Somehow they all talk a few things as something that is important. And yet, let's not get confused that we never actually had an age or a kingdom that had the king who qualifies for all these ideal expectations. We haven't, actually. So, in Taoistic tradition, the worst king is the one who is selfish and greedy, who abuses his people as means to get more to himself. That's the worst kind of king. Next, that little better king is the king who governs and rules with very strict rules by the law. So we set the rule, you keep it. If we say that rule says anybody steals a piece of bread, we cut the hand, we cut the hand. You know, by the book. No exceptions. Third kind of, or next to that, a second, a little better king, is the king who is fair and just, with understanding. So this king loves the people and try to think what is beneficial for the people and rule the kingdom the way how people can be not really happier but fed and have a just system. Interestingly, in a Taoistic tradition, you know what the best king is? The best king is the kind of king that people don't even know they have king. Yeah, they don't even know they have king. They think they're just doing all these things by themselves, and kings somewhat behind, not controlling them, but somewhat nurturing them in a way that they don't even know they have king. And everybody is living to the point that with their own free choices and free wills. But yes, yeah, somehow things happen. In Confucian tradition, the worst king is somewhat similar to the Taoistic tradition. The worst king is the one ruled by blood and fear, meaning that this king will kill and punish. Therefore, this king will control people by fear. Fear is everywhere with this king. But kingdom is managed. All these kings are talking about, the kingdom does not collapse. Okay, this kingdom. There are also other kings who will actually cause the kingdom collapse. The worst kind of king is ruled by fear. And little better one, ruled by the law. Kind of same, isn't it? And they only have three. The best king is, it doesn't rule, actually. It governs people with virtue and charity. Interesting, though. And if you go to the West, actually, Aristotle's philosopher king kind of is very similar in that context with this good quality king. We want this good king to have a brain and a heart, right? So I guess one of the good qualifications to be leader is that you have a good brain, right? And you also have a high motivation. Now my question, do you cultivate them or are you born with them? Good brain, do you cultivate them? Most of the time, you're born with it. How about high motivation to achieve and excel? Do you really cultivate that, or are you born with it? I would say maybe 50-50, or even 60-40, to to the point that 60 is born and 40 is cultivated? I mean, if you really look at the children, how many of those children are really born with it and they go for it? And if they don't have it, how much it takes to encourage them? What I'm trying to suggest in a way is that, yes, we look at certain qualities to have our leaders. And a lot of times these qualities are actually you're born with them. You didn't do anything in a way to have them. Yet sometimes we think we're special because of them. And that causes problems. So the inner quality of good leader that connects to today's readings are actually two things. One is humility. Another is actually selflessness. And in all other traditions, what causes the biggest trouble is selfishness. And I may think I'm not that selfish, or you may think you're not that selfish. Think again. Mm-hmm. And look again. And ancient wisdom kind of asks an interesting question. If you're doing things, good things, let's say you're doing a lot of good things, and let's say by doing so, there's a guarantee that you're not going to gain anything at all. You're not going to gain anything at all by doing so. Not even a single delight in your heart. Would you do it? Would you do it? It depends, you see. But we can't really jump in to say, yes, I'll still do it. It's not a good or bad judgment. Somehow ancient people acknowledged that in a very interesting way. That's why Confucian tradition saying, we all need to go into the manners, behavior with manners. But you can only go to manner by overcoming yourself. And Taoistic tradition says, the source of your evil actually is your selfishness. And Buddhism also warns that the last enemy you need to defeat in your journey to enlightenment is your self-image. The image you create as yourself. And that is your last enemy you need to defeat. And you go into Christian tradition, and right here. And even Socrates, well, famous, right? You know yourself. If you know that you don't know, you know one thing, but you don't even know you don't know, though you know, you think you know, you don't know anything. Right? That was the argument, right? So he knows at least one thing. So he's wise. In a way, all these suggestions comes to in this very interesting, simple story today, that God wants to choose king for Israel. And this one was just a boy. Was a shepherd. Not really tall, not really strong. Doesn't really look wise. Not really stunning. He was the youngest son. The eighth son. Interesting number, actually. You know, the Bible likes numbers. What does number eight stand for? Well, that's modern symbol. But what does... Yeah. You hear number four a lot. There is, like, the ark story, the rain pours down, you know how many days and nights?
40 days and 40 nights.
40 days and 40 nights. Moses in the desert, 40 years. Moses also actually on the mountain to receive the tablet, 40 days and 40 nights. Elisha on a journey, 40 days and 40 nights. I mean, there are so many. Jesus on the desert, 40 days and 40 nights. So number four symbolizes spiritual temptation. And number 10 symbolizes completion. So 40 means a process of spiritual temptation is complete. Mm. Mm. What's number 8 then? You don't really hear number 8.
Double temptation.
There you go. That's good application, right? Yes, that one, and also a new beginning. If you go to the Genesis story, how many days it took to create the world? 6 days, and 7 days God did rest. So 8 is a new beginning. So that's how this boy was chosen. And God said, God looked in the heart. What did he have in the heart? He was just a young boy. And if you read, know the Bible, was David a good man? Was he really a good man?
Not entirely.
Not really, right? He liked the woman, so he killed the woman's husband. And, you know. Yeah. So, he wasn't exactly a good man. Was he really like a law-abiding, just man? Not entirely. He was kind of flexible. But about what was he really good? One thing he had really good in a heart. His own fear of his God. Let's put it that way. He had fear of his God. As a leader, as a king, in the Bible suggests that's the best quality. If the king fears the living God, the king actually will not really do anything that will anger his own God. And he was very faithful. Right? And he never challenged his God either. So David is really praised entire kind of stories for that he fully, completely trusted and relied on his God. And there is later the proverb saying, the wisdom, right? The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. We don't like the word. Why should we fear God who is love? But at the same time, if you fully believe your God is alive and your God is actually watching you, looking over you, and God will be not pleased when we do things that harm other people, will you do it? And as modern psychology teaches us, when we have fear, that comes, that brings our most and first attention. You know that, right? When fear is kind of activated in our mind, can you really control it? That's why we don't want it. We don't like to have any fear. Because it seizes us, our mind and our emotion, and that becomes the priority. In a way, what Bible suggests is somehow that much, we need to embrace the true part of God's teaching. And especially if you're a leader, if you're leading people, You matter because you have influence on other people. What you do will actually create the ripples. So, what's in your heart? That will be your question to you. I don't know. I don't have any psychic powers. I have no idea what's in your heart. But what's in your heart? And hopefully you have some humility in your heart. And hopefully you have some selflessness in your heart. Somehow, all tradition, either religious or not, praises and very highly regard one practice as the most beneficial to human soul. You know what that is? I just told you. An act of selflessness. It is, in a way, sounds simple, but it is not. And that's why. Because in order to act a selfless way, you need to know you're selfish. And you need to see your selfishness. And you need to see, I need to see my own darkness in order to bring the light into it. I need to not only know this, now I need to acknowledge it, I have to accept it, and then I have to hate it. Then there's a room for light to come in. I have to acknowledge my selfishness. I have to accept it. That's the way. And I have to hate it, that selfishness. And then create a room for the selflessness. We talk about love, a lot of love. But true love is born out of selflessness. When we have that, you truly are concerned about the well-being of the other without any expectation of reward, award, not even a delight is necessary. And that's where the word Jesus says, love your neighbor, that's agape. I kind of talked about it in the Christmas day, Christmas Eve. Agape is love that may cause you pain. The love that you may not want to do it, but you know it's good for the person. Therefore, you're willing to do it. And that's agape. And as Jesus said, let us love each other. And in that love, God is present. Amen.